you going, yeah? How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah?
G'day, Ross from the Cosmic Psychos here. Welcome to How You Going, the show where I sit down for a drink and catch up with one of my mates. You'll know my mate in this episode as the drummer from Mudhoney. He's one of the original members and has been twirling his sticks with them since they started way back in 1988. And that's not a euphemism, by the way. Dan and I go way back. I first met him in Melbourne when I went along to see Mudhoney at the Prince of Wales. And there started a friendship that's lasted nearly 40 years. Dan was there in Seattle when grunge took the world by storm. Without Mudhoney, a lot of people reckon grunge wouldn't have been what it was, although no one was calling it grunge back then. Mudhoney have made 11 albums over the years and have played with the Psychos heaps. Dan and I are such good mates that when I asked him to come and play with us on our upcoming tour, he went straight to find his passport. Dan and I had our little chat via the wonders of modern technology back in August. I had a couple of bod-riggy Cosmic Psychos drafts, and Dan sank some of that bloody beer-flavoured water they make in America. And before we kick off, Cosmic Psychos' new album is out this week on November the 7th. It's called Oh, I Really Like Beer, and we'll be heading out in the first leg of our Aussie tour with Dan Peters along for the ride. First few weeks we'll be hitting Melbourne, Castlemaine, Canberra, The Gong, Sydney, Newcastle, and then on to Brizzy, Maroochydore on the Gold Coast. Plus, we've just announced that we're coming to Europe and the UK in April and May 2026. We'll be doing 24 gigs across the UK, Netherlands, Belgium, France, Spain, Germany, and even popping into Italy. Grazie! For dates and tickets for all that, have a look at cosmicpsychos.com.au and we'll see you there. Anyway, so, Dan Peters, how are you going?
Going all right. Just kind of enjoying the last of summer here in Seattle and got back from a trip from the beach on the East Coast with the family.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was nice. We were there for a week.
Marvelous.
Nothing big to report. I've been playing a handful of shows with my other bands, but...
Well, who are you playing with at the moment other than with Mudhoney?
I have a band called the No Three with my buddy Jim Sangster and Kurt Block from the Fastbacks, and Jim's also in a band with me and his brother Johnny Sangster, who records has been doing the last several Mudhoney records, and this guy John Ramberg, he's the main songwriter. And that band's called the Tripwires. I've been playing with them for about, geez, almost 10 years.
Bloody
but
hell.
The No Three are fairly new within the last year or so.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we just play weekends and, you know.
Keeps the beer flowing.
Exactly. There's about 3 bars that they let us old people play around town. So we cycle through the same 3 bars.
Fantastic. Hey, now, I was trying to think. The first time we met, I think it was at the Prince of Wales Hotel in Melbourne.
It was. Yeah, it was the first time we played the Prince of Wales. You had showed up, I think, I think Billy had tipped you off because we met Bill, and he came to a show in London, and we were Cosmic Psychos fans and excited to meet Bill, and then I think we were heading to Australia, and I think Bill was still in Europe, and he might have phoned you and said, you should go see these cats.
That's what I reckon. And I reckon there might have been, was that night, did that end up with a black permanent marker being used?
Yeah, it was you and Digger, and I forget the woman's name. She was from Belgium.
Barbara from Belgium.
That was there visiting you guys, and... Yeah, we all ended up in me and Matt's hotel room after the show, and the Sharpies came out. Yeah, I have a whole photo album dedicated to that night.
I've got a feeling that some of the wonderful artwork was still on your head when you left the hotel the next day. Is that true?
Yeah, possibly. Yes. I think I kept it mostly off my face, but not other people did. But you guys also ended up passing out in our hotel room. So we all just like, we all woke up and, you know, just like, what the hell happened last night? And,
there's been a few of them.
Yeah. No, it was a good night. It was awesome.
And there's another little story that still makes me laugh nervously. And I was at your house one time and I happened to comment on your nice house to your wife. Would you like to elaborate on that story?
Yeah, well, we were walking out of the house to go somewhere, and you told Donna, you got a really nice ass. she's like, did he just say I have a nice ass? And you said, no, I said you have a nice house.
I'll never forget the fear on her face as she ran to you.
Yeah, but I'll see her in his ass.
Just to let everyone know how serious we take music and how serious touring is, any doubts or any regrets about having a stowaway on the Mudhoney bus going to Scotland on a UK tour?
Well, I think there's a few, I wouldn't say regrets, but memories. Ross, you decided to jump on the bus with us for a trip to Scotland. Where did we play the night before? Like London or something?
Manchester, somewhere. I can't remember.
But you and Lucan decided that you would stay up until you got to Glasgow and have a pint when you get there, and then maybe take a nap after that. But our bus driver decided to pull off the road because he needed a break, like about 20 miles or a little ways outside of Glasgow. So you guys decided to stay up and drink because you made the pact that you weren't going to go to bed until you had a pint in Glasgow. So the bus finally, it must have been 10, 11 in the morning, and or maybe even earlier, that the bus pulls up in front of the club. And Matt just goes, like, I'm going to bed. And it just so happened the bus pulled up right in front of an old man pub. And by that time I was awake. I'm like, well, I'll join you for the pint. I remember we walked in there, and it was just a bunch of, like, kind of older dudes just kind of sitting there with a pint of beer in front of him, just kind of staring at it. And we just look around, and I remember you looked at us and go like, it's too bad the first place we have to come up on is such a tourist place. Yeah, so we ended up hanging out there and having more than one, of course. And then, Lucan went down for the count, but me and you did a round that day of, like, various pubs, and we realized, we have a gig to play tonight. We end up getting the sound check, and neither of us were in any condition to sound check, let alone play a show.
Oh, yeah. I had to get, I think I got taken home. I think I saw about one song of the Mudhoney set.
I don't think he would have even seen that.
Yeah, it was good.
I think I remember about none of the Mudhoney set.
I reckon we did a lock in at one stage. There was a pub there with all pictures of boxes around there, and the publican, the pub had to shut, but he just shut the doors and everyone stayed in.
That's right. He pulled the gate. He did. It was like, closing time, but it was like in between breakfast and, he had to close the pub, for several hours. But yeah, that's right. He pulled the gates and we stayed in.
It was about then, I think, and we had totally forgotten that we had to do a gig. I remember it had just slipped our mind.
Yeah. That was the first thing from our mind was we had a gig. It was clearly before we had a phone or anything, and I think we lost track of time.
Slightly.
And I remember arriving at the gig for sound check though, and it probably do a lot of head shaking.
it was all right. There's another. What do you remember about the big day out in Melbourne? And Mudhoney was supposed to play at a certain time, and it had been raining. It was wet and shitty, and I think your plane got delayed, and we had to go on at a different time.
The day before
in the local paper there was a picture of you guys playing, I don't know, you must have been in Reading or somewhere, and you were all covered in mud. They threw mud at you or something, and there's Mudhoney covered in mud. So the crowd was primed to chuck mud at you, but you didn't show up, and they chucked it at us.
Yeah. I remember when you guys were doing your final bow at the end and taking the shorts down. Yeah, that's it all got pummeled in the ass with mud.
I don't reckon Steve Turner's ever forgiven us because Robbie Rocket asked if he could borrow one of Steve's guitars as a backup. And Steve goes, whatever you do, don't let anything happen to it. And goes, yeah, no worries, mate. And I remember looking over at Steve's guitar, and it was like a pyramid of mud. All you could see was the headstock.
Yeah, hopefully there was somewhere there to clean it up.
I think that went on for hours after that with Steve inspecting every little bit. Did you know that I really like beer? Well, I'm here to tell you about a bloody ripper of a Victorian beer called Bodriggy Brewing. And I bloody love them because they brew beers that taste like beer. It's beer so good, we're making a Cosmic Psychos draft with them. Available on tap at all good pubs. If your local doesn't have it, ask them why. Good on you, Bodriggy. Anyway, I'm going to ask you some sensible questions, or maybe. Let's talk about your musical history, shall we?
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. So I read somewhere that your mum was a singer, and do you reckon that played any path of you becoming a musician?
Absolutely. She was a lounge singer in the 70s, and that was her job. She, you know, sang six nights a week. Her brother was also, he wasn't a professional musician and didn't gig, you know, as a younger man, but he played drums and stuff. And he was a really big record buyer and music lover and stuff. So he probably more so than my mom, you know, was kind of influential, like just playing me music all the time. And I would sit in his bedroom and he had a big record collection, and he would just play us all kinds of crazy stuff when we were, I mean, I remember from probably about, you know, 4 years old, you know, on, like, I'd just sit in his room and he'd play me records. But my mom actually had a, you know, a band, and I, for some reason, just kind of was drawn to the drums. You know, I liked the way they looked, you know, it was big and, you know. But yeah, so my mom, you know, definitely, you know, the fact that she played every night, you know, I thought was pretty great. And I mean, you know, there was times when I was, you know, probably like 8 years old that I'd go like, you know, I'll get a drum set and I'll play drums for my mom. Mm-hmm. Little Partridge Family kind of, you know, but yeah, I didn't have a drum kit. But yeah, up throughout all the 70s, my mom was pretty much doing music and playing in bars stuff.
Did you follow in? Did you do any high school bands or anything? When did you actually take the drums up, apart from wishing that you wanted to play drums?
Well, I didn't get my own drum set until I was 14, but I had made drum sets and stuff before that, you know, all my school books I used as, you know, drums, and I had a broken kick pedal that I beat against my bed frame, and I had like a broken hi-hat cymbal. So I'd sit in my room and listen to records and play along to the records on whatever makeshift drum set I could, you know, cobble together. My uncle at that point had a re-interest in playing music and bought a drum set. So I'd go over to his house and, you know, by the time like he got that drum set, I could actually sit behind it and play it. And so that was cool. And then, I mean, without getting too far in the woods and like, you know, but I had a horrible stepdad. And when I was 14, my uncle was in a band and the lead singer of that band knew I wanted a drum set, and he had one and he gave it to me. And so when I was 14, I packed up and left that situation and moved down to Seattle and with my drum set, with the whole idea of I want to go down and I want to play music. And so I joined my first band at probably 15, 16 and started gigging.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. I played my first show in 83. And I've been playing ever since.
Unreal. I never knew that there. So you learn something new every day.
Yeah, the story can go on for hours, but
we'll continue that one back in the Scottish pub one day.
Yeah, there you go.
So you've played with heaps and heaps of bands. Do you take something from each band, or you're just in there having fun, or?
Yeah, well, everything was like when my first band that I started doing gigs with, I was in for that band for 8 years. They were called Bundle of Hiss, but that was the band I learned how to play with people. You know, I'd only played the records before, and so that was, you know, a learning experience. But then after that, you know, I realized I wanted to play with other people and learn other things. And so when I was 18, I joined a band called Feast. The two bands were not the same. And you just kind of learn how to play dynamically different with people and stuff. You know, I just wanted to play, really. So the opportunity to play with different people was kind of what was more exciting for me than what I was really taking away.
Yeah. And when was the Mudhoney sort of thing come together?
So all these bands that I mentioned, like Bundle of Hiss and Feast, we were all going and playing at the same time as, like, say, Green River and Soundgarden and, you know, Skin Yard and all these kind of Seattle bands. But we were all just, like, in the same circle of people and would go to the same shows. And, you know, if, like, you know, Mark Arm's band Green River were opening. So Green River were kind of the big fish in the small pond at the time. My band, Feast, that I was in, kind of was getting a pretty good reputation around town, and we could do pretty well at you know, like, when I say well, you know, we could have at least 50, 75 people at a show if we on a good night. So we all were, you know, Matt was in the Melvins, and, you know, so we'd, you know, go see the Melvins, and, you know, became, you know, Mark and Steve became really good friends with, you know, those guys. And then in 87, Green River broke up, and I ran into Mark in a line for the bathroom at a show. I was in line for the bathroom and waiting for it, and then the person that was in the bathroom came out, and Mark just runs by me. He's like, I gotta get out. And he ran in the bathroom and then, like, vomited all over the place and then comes out, and he's like, Green River broke up. And he was all excited about the fact that Green River broke up. Then I went in the bathroom. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So that's when I was, I guess I'd have been 20. And I had jammed with Steve and some other people in a basement party. At a basement party, I had jammed with them. And Steve, like, asked me if I want to start a band with him. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. You know, I really liked the way Steve played. And we just kind of didn't know what was going to happen. We just kind of knew we all kind of liked each other and liked the way they each other played. And I think Mark asked Steve, like, you know, or told Steve said that I was going to play with him. And he's like, how the hell do you get him to play with you? I'm like, I'll play with anybody.
Because, I mean, you've played with shitloads of bands. And like, the scene over there was, like, I just caught it. You're spending a bit of time over there, but yourself watching it build, and then all of a sudden it went from that really close-knit Seattle scene to it, like, taking over the bloody world. It was a kind of a weird explosion. How did you find it?
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, you know, none of us expected it. By the time you guys actually made it to Seattle for the first time, it was pretty crazy at that point. Yeah. When we started, there was nobody ever thought that we would leave Seattle. We would, you know, go to Europe. We would, you know, make it to Australia. We would, there was no, I mean, if somebody would have said that, they would have been laughed at, you know. And so when me and Mark, Steve and Matt got together, we knew that kind of between all of us, people would be interested in the band, locally, at least locally. You know, so once again, we could do pretty well in Seattle, you know, just because all our bands kind of did fairly well. And that's about, you know, where we kind of thought it would be.
Yeah, because I remember when I first got to Seattle, I think it was to your house, Lucan was still in Europe, and then we walked in the lounge room and you had to, you know, I think you were drumming with Nirvana for a little while. Were you just helping them out or just filling in, or what were you doing at that stage? Because you were off to practice.
What happened there? So what happened there was they got rid of Chad, kicked him out, and I ran into Chris and Kurt's girlfriends at a show one night, and they're like, oh, Chad's not going to be in the band anymore. And I'm like, well, if they're looking for a drummer, I really like the band, and, you know, but I would be totally happy to play with them if they'd be interested. And, you know, I got a call from Kurt, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds good. And, you know, we got together and started practicing and stuff, and it was great. I mean, it was hard because, I mean, at that point I had just like this little drum set that I, you know, loved and thought was great. But it was like a 20-inch kick drum and like a little 13-16. I remember the first practice we got together, I had a practice space down in the industrial area of downtown. We went in there and, like, you know, Kurt brings in some kind of stack of some sort, and, you know, Chris has his, you know, big bass cabinet, and I've got my little wee little drum set. I should have saw the writing on the walls at that moment. But we started playing, and, like, you know, Chris is like, I can't hear your drum. I'm like, yeah, neither can I. Yeah. And then Kurt brought this beast of, like, this old piece of shit drum set in, but they were, like, massive. Like, the rack tom was the size of a floor tom, and it was probably held together with, like, baling wire, you know. It's like, and he's like, you want to play this? I'm like, no. The upshot with that is there was a show booked in Seattle, and I'm like, well, I'll borrow a drum set for this that's bigger than mine. And I did the show, which is a kind of a legendary show in Seattle for, like, Nirvana, this place called the Motorsports International Garage.
I remember that, yeah.
Played that show, and I look over, and, you know, Dave Grohl's, he arrived with the band and is hanging out with the band, and I've heard tale of this guy, and so that was that.
That was that.
I think he had been in town and actually practicing with him before I played the show with him, and probably could have done a much better job than I did, but they're pussies and they didn't have the guts to tell me that I wasn't going to be in the band anymore. After that show, they were heading down to LA to talk to record companies. And so I don't know, by the time you arrived, if I'd been fired yet or if I was still.
I think you were still.
But,
still
yeah, I get a phone call one day, and it was Kurt. And I'm like, hey, how's it going? He's like, yeah, good. And it's like, looks like we're going to sign to Geffen. I'm like, cool. That sounds great. You know, blah, blah, blah. I was meant to do a tour with them in the UK. I'm like, so what's up with the UK tour? And that's when he's like, that's what I'm calling to tell you. You know, we got another drummer. And I'm like, And at the time, I wasn't bummed or anything. I'd been in Mudhoney for, you know, that quite the time. And the dynamic with Mudhoney was such fun, and, you know, everybody was, like, you know, having fun, and there just seemed to be, like, this with Nirvana, there just seemed to be, like, this kind of dark cloud hanging over them all the time. So it wasn't like I ever, you know, felt like, these guys are my friends or anything. And it was just like, you know, I liked the music and stuff, but when they, you know, said they got a new drummer, it was more of a sigh of relief than, you know, being bummed out. Until about 6 months later. Son of a...
You played with Screaming Trees for a little bit too, didn't you? Was just helping them out? Or?
Yeah, after that... Because the reason why I even, like, was doing this, because Steve had this idea that he was going to go back to school and, you know, finish his degree. And, of course, you know, Mudhoney we were just starting to do really well and, you know, touring a lot and making some money and, you know, and having a good time. And I'm like, I'm just feel like I'm getting going here. You know, it's like, I don't want to stop. So that's why, one of the reasons why I, you know, solicited the Nirvana people, you know, is because I knew they were going to record and tour and, you know, whatnot. And I wanted to keep busy. So when Nirvana gave me the boot, I don't know how long it was, probably like a couple weeks later, I get a phone call and I'm like, hello. And I hear this, hey. I'm like, who's this? He's like, it's Flanagan. I'm like, what's up? He's like, I hear you would be interested in playing for the Trees. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Because Van Connor, their bass player, had quit, and he went to play with Dinosaur Jr. And in the interim, they had this woman, Donna Dresch, playing bass for them. And then their drummer quit. Their original drummer, Mark Pickerel, quit. So at that point, when I was talking to, when Flanagan called me up, he said that if Van doesn't come back, they're going to get one of Donna's friends to be their drummer. But if Van comes back, then they'll get me. And apparently Flanagan talked to Van, and the fact that I agreed to play drums, Van came back. And me and Van became really good friends, as you do with the bass players and drummers. But I did two or three tours with the Trees in like 91, I think. You know, but you know, the whole time playing with other bands, I always compared it to, was it as fun? Was it as much camaraderie? Was it Mudhoney? You know, and I just felt like Mudhoney was just as much my band that it is Mark's band, or is it Steve's band, or it was Matt's band. And, you know, now just as much as Guy, I always felt like, you know, we all were Mudhoney. I never felt that way when I was with, like, you know, either Nirvana or Screaming Trees. I always just kind of felt I was just, you know, a guy in the band. And then the Trees were talking about recording their follow-up to their Uncle Anesthesia record. I'm like, well, if I commit to this, I got to commit to it. You know, so I talked to Steve, and I'm like, look, I got a decision to make here. I need to, like, figure out what's going on with Mudhoney, or should I stick with this Trees thing because they're wanting to record a new record. Steve's like, yeah, I want to tour again. I want to keep it going and stuff. So I called Flanagan and said, you know, I'd love to record a record with you guys, but I think I'm going to, you know, go back to Mudhoney because, you know, Steve's ready to keep it going. And Mark said, well, I think it'd probably be best if we get somebody to record the record with us. It's going to be in the band. And, you know, sure, great, you know. And of course they went on to make, you know, Sweet Oblivion, which is one of their greatest records. And just like Nirvana went on to make Nevermind, Screaming Trees go on to make Sweet Oblivion. I'm like, I'm like, God.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have had much fun though, would you?
No, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be filthy rich, but you wouldn't have any fun.
Well, Screaming Trees never got filthy rich, but I am still alive.
Exactly. Exactly.
The three of them are not.
Yeah. Bloody hell. Here's to them.
If you're a bit like me and you want to say no to water, then be like me and always keep a slab of Heaps Normal in the fridge. It'll get you through those good times that are too good to be wasted. And when I'm on the dozer, Heaps Normal, non-alcoholic beers give me the same heavenly taste of beer when I just can't afford the hassle. I call them stunt beers because you get all the action without anyone doing a mischief to themselves. Heaps Normal, too good to be wasted.
Getting back onto some musicy kind of questionsy things, so what is it like being older, still playing and being older? Like we've all got on in age, as you said before, we're all still alive. I personally don't feel any different to when I was when I first started, like when you play. But I mean, apart from the aching bones and being half deaf and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I have struggles, you know. you know, my hands have problems. And so actually before the tour, I'm going to have some surgery on my wrists, carpal tunnel surgery. So I'm going to have that done. And it's like, because, you know, my hands kind of buzz and go numb, and that always kind of bums me out. And I mean, you know, the physicality of like playing drums is, you know, everybody else in Mud Honey has kind of found a way to just kind of like do their thing without, you know, every once in a while we'll get done with the show. They're like, oh, that show wasn't hot. You know, it wasn't too bad. I didn't really sweat much. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Because you're just standing there. And I'm just like, you know, drowning and like, you know, just dripping. And, you know, every once in a while it's a struggle. And, you know, I'll be 58 in a couple of days. And, you know, so I guess I'm still on the young side in the Mud Honey world. And, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll be 64 at the end of the year.
Yeah, man.
So, bloody hell. Oh well, between your wrists and my two artificial hips, we'll be flying.
Yeah, I got one artificial hip.
Oh, really? Fantastic! Yeah, that's yeah. Oh, mate, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, I had that a couple of years ago.
Unreal! I didn't know that. You didn't tell me that last time I saw you. I can't remember if we talked about it or not.
Yeah. I think we might have talked about it because I knew you had the two.
Yeah. Oh well, we'll continue those hip stories later on.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, are you doing anything else apart from just touring and stuff? Like, you're making any, do you work at all or just semi-retired or just?
Yeah, I actually drive my car as a Uber driver.
How's that? How do you find that? Something to do?
It's all right. It's not, I just do it during the mornings and afternoons and, you know, I just need to, you know, keep myself busy and stuff and, you know, get out of the house and stuff. It's kind of just a side gig.
Yeah.
And it's weird, but whatever. It's like, I just drive around and take people to the airport and do that and, you know.
Something to do.
But.
And you and I became dads around about the same time, roughly.
Yeah, 2000.
Did that, when the kids were growing up, did that have much of an impact on your touring and stuff? Like, it's a bit of a, can be a bit of a.
Yeah, so, train. I mean, when we decided to start a family, it was my wife, she's an attorney, so she was kind of going to be the main breadwinner, and I would do the stay-at-home dad. I wasn't really sure how much touring we would do and stuff, but we kind of, you know, worked out well with the band. We were kind of, you know, dialing back as much as the amount of touring we wanted to do. So I did the stay at home dad stuff. And then the reason why I'm kind of Ubering now is because all my kids are grown and don't need me driving them anywhere. So I'll drive other people somewhere. But we definitely dialed back the amount of touring we were doing. For a while there, we were doing a lot of fly-in weekends. Like, we'd fly to New York and, you know, rent gear and rent a van and play like three shows in the New York area. Then the next weekend we'd fly to Texas, do three shows, and it worked out for a while. But it got to be like a, you know, major drain as well, because Guy was working at the hospital, so he would like have 4 days off in a row. So if he had 4 days off in a row, we would like hop on a plane and go play four shows in a row somewhere. But that, you know, went on for several years. But we started doing tours again. We kind of like said, okay, we'll do like two tours a year. You know, one in Europe, and they ended up all being mostly in Europe. But we could, you know, do a lot of like the major markets in the States on weekends, you know. So that's kind of, you know, with the family and stuff, that's kind of way we started working things. And we really have never went back to like full on touring, other than maybe a couple jaunts every year. I think the plan is we try to do something every 6 months.
Yeah.
And that's getting a little more difficult since Guy moved back to Australia. But We have a handful of shows coming up, and we're using our the bass player that I play with, Jim Sangster. We're doing 4 shows in Canada, 1 show in Bellingham, 1 show in Seattle, and Jim Sangster's filling in on the bass. But if, like, we do a big tour, like if we go to Europe, Guy will fly over and meet us in Europe, and, you know, we'll practice for a few days and then hit the road. We just did South America and met Guy in Sao Paulo and in Brazil and practiced with him there and stuff. But yeah, I mean, having a family, it's, you know, changed things a lot. It's, you know, but I think it was a good thing. You know, there was no point in, I mean, none of us felt compelled to, like, need to slog it out, you know, like we used to and stuff. But to be able to still do it and go all over the place still at, you know, how old are the Cosmic Psychos now? Like, got to be 40?
Yeah, it's around the 40 now, so.
Yeah, I mean, Mudhoney's like 36, 37. Yeah. But to still be able to, you know, travel the world, and it's pretty awesome.
Oh, mate.
But not have to rely on it as your, like, sole source of income, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's just the sole source of alcoholism. That's about it.
Yeah. Oh!
You still got, are the kids still at home, or you're an empty nester?
Funny thing is, my daughter's been up in Bellingham, which is north of Seattle, up near the Canadian border. There's a Western Washington University up there, and she went to school up there, but she's stayed behind and stayed up there an extra year or so. But she currently is going to be back down here in September and coming back down to try to figure out what she wants to get up to. And my 2 boys, they're still here. So we're going to be all reunited here in September. it's a good time to bugger off to Australia for the month of November, I tell you.
That's perfect, mate.
But the boys are 19 and 20, and, you know, they're good kids, and, yeah, unreal. I like having them around.
Yeah, my youngest bloke, he's just headed off and joined the army, so I'm home alone now, and it's quiet. I tell you, it's really quiet.
Yeah, not necessarily. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing.
Well, I told him, my advice to him was, there's 2 choices in life. You can be shot at, or you can be paid to be shot at. So that's his career.
Yeah.
Just one more question on the kids. What's the biggest lesson the kids ever taught you?
Certainly patience, but I don't know if that's a, you know, lesson or a I don't know, that you're certainly not the only person in the room.
Now, patience is a good, that's my standard answer is patience. I reckon that is a good answer, because it is a lesson. Yeah. It takes years, but you get there eventually.
Yeah. I'm still working on it.
Yeah. Forever.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. Apparently, you're coming back to Australia in November.
How's about that? Huh?
Yeah.
I got the strange invite to come on down and play some music. I can tick another band off my list, huh?
It'll be interesting to see what you take out of playing with the Psychos, other than a hangover and whacking on a few pounds.
I'm hoping to lose a few there.
I think we're working pretty hard. I think there's a few shows, because you and I haven't discussed anything about this except for, I think I sent you a text message saying, don't worry about it too much. We get to the gig very late and we leave very early and get back to the room and have a beer.
And that all sounds awesome to me. I mean, I've hung out in enough stinky venues to last me the rest of my life. So
I'm a bit the same way now. I like a liquid lunch, a grandpa nap, and then you get to the venue all fresh and ready to go again.
So do you guys sound check?
No.
Okay.
You can if you want. I don't, but if you... Digger usually sound checks the bass for me, but we can sound check. It's up to you. I don't give a rat's ass.
I guess we'll suss it out at rehearsals then. I'm trying to, you know, I've been giving everything a whack on my drums at home. And I guess one of the things that I have a question, and I'll probably do a little more online research, is how differently some of the songs are played.
Well, I have to do all the band practice on my own in the shed with listening to CDs. You know, you've got Dean's drumming, everything's different, and a bit of BC's drumming, a bloke we did some recording with. Right. And it's, yeah, it's they have morphed a little bit over the years, a little bit, but
right.
I think it'll come together all right and come together pretty quickly. I mean, we can't fuck up 2.5 chords, can we?
I can.
But as long as you don't play in football boots and white underpants like Bill does and keep time, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I've just been, you know, giving them a go on my drums here at home. And, you know, so hopefully when I get there, I'll be somewhat prepared.
Yeah, well, I think you've got to come up to the farm. We've got, like, you're going to stay in what was a house that Jaika used to live in, up on the vineyard there. So it's like a few bands have used it for recording and practice and stuff. So it's really well set it out. So we should be right.
Cool.
Give you a couple of days to get over the jet lag and we'll allow 4 hours to practice the songs and we're done.
Well, I will come as prepared as possible.
Yeah. Well, don't come too prepared. We won't be. But I'll give you a final list so you don't get too confused, but we'll just make sure we know what we're doing, mate. We're professional musicians.
So they say.
Yeah. Anyway, it'd be good beer drinking time to do it.
Yeah. How do you guys travel?
Well, we'll be doing a little bit in a van with a trailer and probably a combination of that and fly.
Right.
So, like, we'll try and eliminate any big drives because we don't like them. But the main thing about getting from town to town, mate, is finding a really good place for lunch.
Yeah.
So that's the most important thing.
There you go.
The rest just falls into place.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
What's your favourite thing about coming to Australia? What do you reckon?
Being in Australia.
That's a good place to be at the moment.
It is. It takes a fucking long time to get there, but once you're there, you're good to go.
Apart from the travel part, but it's not that bad. 14, what do you got? Oh, no, you got about 15, 16 hours from Seattle to Melbourne.
Yeah, from San Francisco. We got to go from here to San Francisco, and then San Francisco is about 14 hours.
Yeah, and then I'll pick you up from the airport. It'll be about a 3 to 4 stubby trip back up to the farm.
Well, there you go. No, but I'm looking forward to it. I feel honored that you asked me.
Oh, mate, it's gonna be bloody awesome. It's gonna be fun. It'll be just good fun to see you close up
and
not feel guilty about pinching your beer because it'll be our beer.
And will Digger be with us?
Yeah, should be. Digger will be there, so we'll have the crew there. So it'll be a good fun. It'll be a good time.
Excellent.
A good time. How are you going to go dropping your DAX? Are you okay with showing your 56-year-old ass to a crowd?
I never have, but I guess it's the first time for everything, right?
Well, I feel like I'm pretty safe when it comes to mooning because I wear a long shirt and everyone's looking at Macca's bum anyway, so it's all right.
I was like, that was one of the things I kind of bolted up one night and go like, am I going to have to drop my pants?
You won't have to sign off on that one. That's up to you. But we were thinking about stopping doing it. And we played a festival in the UK last year. And, of course, we did our usual thing, mooned our, you know, dropped our dacks and turned around. And the crowd was quite young, except for the odd old cripple. And we were told how so uncool it is to drop your dacks. Like, oh, really? It's just so uncool. And we're going, oh, fuck, well, we won't stop doing that then. We might as well keep going with it. Because it is. It's a bit frightening for young people, you know, that looking at an old ass, I suppose. But whatever.
You got to take one for the team, right?
Yeah, well, we'll play that card as it goes. We'll see how we go. All right, mate. Well, look, I'll see you soon.
Yeah. Look forward to it, Ross.
And I'll chat to you soon when we'll work out a more concentrated song list you can concentrate on or not concentrate on. Either which way, mate, we'll be right.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, mate. Well, on that note, I'll see you soon.
All right.
Good on you, mate. Great to talking, mate.
Yeah. Cheers, guys.
So there you have it. Just a couple old mates talking about past exploits and making plans for future ones. Dan, I'll see you at the airport, and I look forward to chatting with you face to face and bearing my ass with you on stage.
And to those listening, if seeing our old asses is something that tickles your fancy, this is your friendly reminder that Dan is touring with the Psychos throughout November. How You Going is produced by Sam Loy with Matt Weston as the executive producer. It's proudly supported by Heaps Normal and Bod Riggy Brewing, the best brewskis going around. Come back for the next episode of How You Going, where I'll be having a chat with an icon of Aussie music, Adelita. Here's a sneaky look.
I was asked to do a scene and my scene partner was Russell Crowe. I was like, what? Sure, I'll do that. I'm in. So we sung a song together and it was quite a long day of shooting and it was exciting. And
oh, wow.
But it ended up on the cutting room floor.
And remember, the Cosmic Psychos are kicking off a tour real soon as we try and flog our new album, Oh, I Really Like Beer. So check out cosmicpsychos.com.au for all the drip trade details and come out and see our mate Dan Peters bang the skins. All right, I've got to get out of here. I'll see you soon.
How you going, yeah?